I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. We're talking politics as usual. I'm joined here in the studio by, I don't even have my name, from Ralph, you know, from Rob, you know, from Red Mask Group. Ralph. I knew Ralph, you know, I worked with him in Hartford, now that I think of that. Rob, you know. From Red Mask Group.
Ralph Rob.
I like the name Ralph. That's a good name.
Mara Dolan. She's an attorney and co-chair of the Policy Committee of the Massachusetts Democratic State Committee. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I can't believe we're going to talk about this already, but the governor's race 2014, we heard Mara last week, the Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray say that he wanted to get in. I think there was just a collective groan everywhere. My bet is including with the Democratic Party. Am I right?
Certainly a lot of questions have been raised in the media. I think that if the lieutenant or governor does run, he's going to have to answer those questions. So that's...
He says he has.
Well,
We're talking about the car accident,
yes,
of course. That was a year ago, November.
Well, you know, there is the issue of the cell phone records not being released. And I think that is a legitimate question. What I wonder, though, is whether he could have a third party look at the cell phone records and determine whether or not they in any way relate to the accident. And if they don't, that would end the discussion.
Hmm. Well, presumably somebody has done that.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, so you don't think he's permanently damaged goods, though?
That's a really tough question. I think it's a really he's certainly going to have to answer those questions. I mean, we just saw with Elizabeth Warren's U.S. Senate campaign that there was an issue that was raised that took a long time to die down. But ultimately it did, and it ended up not hurting her. So he may have the same experience.
Rob, there's so much in play here, and it's really dependent on whether Senator John Kerry gets an appointment in the Obama cabinet, whether it's Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense. That's just going to set off a chain reaction because that would mean another open Senate seat, and then people are going to have to decide whether they go for the Senate seat or the governor's seat. The names swirling around, of course, on the Republican side of Scott Brown, naturally, and possibly Charlie Baker again. What's your feeling?
On the Senate seat, I am of the opinion that there will not be a special election. I think that the Democrats, you know, they just got reelected with overwhelming majorities and they change the rules all the time. And I have a feeling they're just going to change the rules again and they don't think that there'll be any ramifications for it. So I really don't think that there's going to be a Senate election.
I know the governor said no,
but the governor said no about other stuff before. Mm-hmm. I think that, and quite frankly—
You think he'll just appoint someone to finish them?
I think that the legislature can override a governor's veto. So if Bob DeLeo and Terry Murray don't want there to be an election, there's not going to be an election. Back to Lieutenant Governor Murray, I think the bigger question for Lieutenant Governor Murray is what's happening with the McLaughlin probe Chelsea thing. I mean, there's more serious questions about Lieutenant Governor Murray than just the car accident.
Yes, and he may be linked to this Susan Burgess person, too, who lost her job as the chief safety officer after it was revealed that she had 34 vehicle infractions, including twice, you know, trying to outrun a cop.
Perhaps she was giving Lieutenant Governor Murray driving lessons. I'm not quite sure. Maybe that was her advisory role.
I'm not sure if he was linked to that, but apparently his name was. It was a patronage job of some sort.
Right, and they came out yesterday. I think in the Herald there was the Globe story, but in the Herald it came out that there were 20 new $100,000 a year patronage jobs in the past few years, including the Democratic Party Chairman John Walsh's sister, who got $109,000 a year job. I'm sure that there was a nationwide search for that.
Yeah, doing what?
I forget exactly where she's at, but it's in some sort of environmental type quasi agency somewhere. But it's $109,000 a year.
I have to say, I have not heard anything. This is the first I've heard about anything of that. So I hope that we'll have another opportunity to address that issue.
What? Which one?
When John Walsh's sister getting a job and why she did and what it is. I don't know anything about it.
No, I don't either.
It's the first time I heard it.
It was in the Herald yesterday.
Yeah.
It was in the Boston.
But it really makes you wonder, I mean, about so many state jobs, you know, if that's just one of them. Susan Burgess, we do know.
And we do know that there was a story yesterday that there's 20 new jobs that are over $100,000 a year. And we know that Governor Patrick, you know, tried to appoint Marion Walsh to a $175,000 a year job. We know that, you know, if you look at the UMass Medical Center payroll, it's filled with people that have donated to Governor Murray or Lieutenant Governor Murray. I mean, patronage is a problem in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We have a WHERE probe that says that, and it doesn't stop there. And anybody that thinks that it does, I think, is holding a blind eye.
But I think that's everywhere, Rob. It's not just.
I think it's especially in Massachusetts. I think that you know, there's a few places in this country where that's brought to an art form, and I think Massachusetts is one of them.
Do you think so, Mar?
I don't think it's especially in Massachusetts, no. And without looking at specific jobs and why people got those specific jobs and what they're worth and what we need to pay in order to get good people to do good work for the Commonwealth, then this conversation is lopsided and ultimately uninformative.
Well, perhaps we should bring back the civil service requirement for jobs. We hire people on part-time basis, and we get around the civil service law. There is a civil service law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and just about every job is filled without it. So maybe that's what we need to get back to if we really want to get to the issue. Mm. And it's not something that's been done. Everybody's on a temporary basis and a waiver and all that kind of thing. Maybe we just bring civil service back, and then we wouldn't be having this discussion to begin with.
Yes, we would. Civil service works the same way. There's many issues, maybe even more.
There is no perfect system, ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, you can get patronage in a civil service job, too.
Right.
Right?
Well, you at least got to pass the test, supposedly.
Then you have a big discussion about the test, whether the test is fair, whether it's testing what we need to test, et cetera, et cetera.
So Mayor Menino, come Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, he will have been in the hospital for 4 weeks. Do you feel like we're getting the straight story on what's happening?
I don't know. I mean, certainly being in the hospital for 4 weeks is a cause for concern, but that doesn't by itself show that he won't be able to run for another term, and he may very well be. So we don't know. Hmm.
I was actually shocked to find out how old he was, that he's close to 70. I mean, that's not
He'll
old
be
70 anymore. It's not really old anymore, but it is getting up there. I didn't realize that he was that, but then I guess when, you know, he's been mayor for almost 20 years, I guess that kind of makes some sense. I mean, Mayor Menino's a great guy. I mean, I lived in East Boston, yeah. And he's just everywhere, you know, because I work in the innovation district in the Marine Industrial Park, and he kind of adopted that, and he loves that area, and we see him there all the time. So, I mean, he's a great guy. He's a great mayor.
We all agree, and
I don't know what it means. I mean, he's had a lot of health problems.
I think that we all agree that he's a great mayor and he's tremendous concern for the city and the people of the city, so that if there were something we needed to know at this point, we would know it.
Yeah, the issue is, though, should anyone have, you know, a job for life? I know it happens in Congress. I mean, it's very unusual anywhere. It's basically unprecedented. I don't even know if he's the longest serving mayor ever. If he takes, is it a fifth term or a sixth?
It would be a sixth if he runs again.
Is it 4 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
The problem is that no one dares run against him. I mean, we've had, you know, a couple of other city councilors, Maura Hennigan, and a couple of people. Michael Flaherty ran against him. But would anyone of substance, do you think, Maura, from the Democratic Party, dare go after him?
Well, you use the word dare. I mean, certainly
dare.
Incumbency is a huge advantage, and 20-year incumbency is an even greater advantage than that. Most people in Boston have actually met him.
Yeah, sure.
He means something to them personally. So that would be incredibly tough to beat. It doesn't mean that someone wouldn't try, because they might say, well, he might not run for a seventh term. So I'll run now. I don't expect to win, but I'll put myself in a position to run next time. So we may have an interesting race whether he runs next time or not.
You know, he's not... He's a Luddite. He's not sophisticated with technology, although he's hired people. He's got people around him that are really, really critical and terrific with that. But I guess to your point, Rob, and the fact that he's almost 70, is it time to get somebody in there that's
the New Boston Coalition or something like that, the guy that runs Karma Loop?
Oh, yeah. We've had him on a couple times.
He's an interesting person. What's that guy's name?
Can you remember, Chelsea?
I can't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Greg Selko.
Greg Selko. I think he's a very interesting thought, because he's talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's all
he's
kinds
a thorn
of,
in Mayor Menino's side. Mayor Menino should embrace him.
He should, because it's. I mean, having lived in the city, there's some things. I lived in East Boston, and East Boston is basically an island. After 12:30, because you can't get there from here. The cabbies don't want to bring you home, because they got to pay a tab to come. They got to get a tab, to come back and things like that. And you know, there's a lot of stupid fees. I was shocked to find out that, you know, in the city of Boston, if you want a TV in your bar, you got to pay a VIG to the city for every TV.
You got to pay a what?
a license fee.
Really?
To get every single
get a TV
in a bar. Yeah, every single TV that's in a bar requires a license fee. There's all these kind of things that stops entrepreneurship in the city of Boston, and that's what Greg from Karmaloop is trying to fight against.
Well,
you know, the 2 o'clock closing times, those sorts of things.
But Boston is doing tremendously well. I mean, I don't think there are any serious complaints about the management of the city. You know, the
it's
innovation.
Filthy. Well, that's my big complaint.
Is that your big thing?
Yeah, I can't stand it. I live right downtown. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. Newbury Street is supposed to be the premier. It's supposed to be our Rodeo Drive. Do you think Rodeo Drive? Have you been on Newbury Street recently?
No, I don't live in Boston or work
it's
in Boston.
It's awful. So, I mean, and it's totally dug up by this sewer project. Okay, that's one thing. You know, that's bad enough. But it's just like the storekeepers do everything they can. They sweep. They do. But you know, it's largely the smokers.
Well, maybe we
and
need
the Dunkin'
to
Donuts
raise
coffee
fees
drinkers
so that we can address this
cups.
Trash issue. I mean, we've got to pay for that, right? And we've got Rob Eno saying, well, there are too many fees, but how are you going to pay to clean up the city if you don't have
you got to get people to stop
polluting?
Yeah.
People don't drop styrofoam cups on Rodeo Drive. Why do
they
do
drop
it?
Them on Newbury Street?
They drop them everywhere.
That is a scandal. No, that's terrible. That is truly terrible.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. No,
and,
I really am.
And
that's
cigarette
awful.
Butts. Who does that?
No, that's awful.
Yeah, so
that's
it's not
awful.
About hiring people. It's about, you know, smacking
getting people,
people up upside the head. Yeah. Got to get them to stop.
Yeah. I agree.
What else would we fix? Come on, Ralph. Ralph. Jeez, Rob.
I like Ralph. I think we should.
I think you know the city has a lot of good things going for it. I would, you know, and I know you've got it. There's certain areas that need maybe a little bit more tea service, and I think that people should pay more to use the tea late at night or. You know, I really feel bad for the people of East Boston. Anywhere else in the city, you can get where you need to go.
Not you
with
can't
a taxi.
Get to Dorchester that easily.
It's easier
Hyde
than
Park.
You can walk. You can't walk across the water. You know what I mean? That's that's the thing that always was weird to me is, you know, you if you live in East Boston, and there's actually a lot of people that live in East Boston that are in service jobs that, you know, find it hard to get home at the end of the night. You know, they were my neighbors. I talked to them. That is a really interesting neighborhood in the city, and I think it's what keeps the rents down in that neighborhood of the city.
Because
you can't get there from here.
Well, that's certainly something that we need to improve, not just transportation, but affordable housing, and we need to tie them together. We've got to have affordable housing that's accessible by public transportation, which will also help the economy.
Well, there is some.
There's some, but there's not enough. There's not enough.
All right, what else do we want to talk about here?
Well, we didn't spend enough time talking about the potential U.S. Senate race.
Let's go back to that.
Okay.
Go.
Well, there are a lot of questions. It is, Rob is absolutely right, it is not a given that there will simply be an interim appointment. It isn't a given that the interim appointee won't seek re-election. And although the governor has said that he said the legislature doesn't have the will to change the rules, they may change their mind and change the rules so that the governor can appoint someone to fill out the term. Think about it. If we do have a special election and the seat is filled by Mike Capuano or Ed Markey, then we have to have a special election to fill their seat, which might be filled by a state senator. We then have to have a special election to fill that seat, which might be filled by a state rep. We could be looking at four special elections. And I also think that in a potential special election, I think that Scott Brown would have a very difficult time. Well, he just lost the race by 7 points. Now, the Democrats had a huge numbers advantage going in because there were over 600,000 people who voted in the presidential election 2008 who didn't go to the polls to vote in the special election 2010. We knew they'd be back, so there was already that huge number. But now the Democrats have strengthened their infrastructure, so it's ready to go again. But one mitigating factor is that the reason the infrastructure was strengthened as well as it was is that Elizabeth Warren inspired them. She really moved the Democrats. She got new people out there knocking on doors. And
I
also,
don't know about that.
No, she did.
I'm telling you because I was one of the people who was concerned about her running before I met her. And then once I met her, she was wonderful in the field. She really was. One-on-one in rooms, in halls, talking with people on the street. She really was. She was warm and personable and people absolutely loved her.
It's a couple of factors. One, it was a presidential year and there were the 600,000 new people. Another factor is, you know, there was somebody that looked at me the day that the story came out that Elizabeth Warren's daughter's organization got Deval Patrick against the wishes of the Secretary of State to send out 250,000 voter registration forms to people that were on welfare and EBT. And
they could have been, some of them could have been Republicans.
Yeah, some of them could have been Republicans, but a lot
but
of those got
voted.
A lot
to
of those,
send
a lot
those
of,
notices out by law. They
and they did.
To meet
and
the
no, they weren't required
yes, they
to
were.
Send every other there's a lot of other states that didn't kowtow
but
and didn't
they
do it.
Should
but
have.
We complied.
But
exactly.
Did you know that every single household in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts got a voter registration form mailed to them before the voter registration deadline? It was in your voter information guide. So that could have fulfilled the requirement of that. Every single home got a voter registration guide. It was her daughter using her organization to try and get more votes for her.
I don't
and
know
that's
how,
exactly
how effective
what happened.
That was.
No, I think it was very effective because I'm actually one of the things I'm going to talk to the Secretary of State about in one of the stories that I'm working on is to find out how many new registered voters there were,
yeah, I'd be curious
how many
about
of them
that.
Were Democrat, and how many of them got turned
well,
out.
Do it.
Because that
why,
was the.
But this is why the Democrats win, is because we actually believe in democracy, and we want to bring people into the process. We want them to vote. We're not going
to vote
jig the rules so that they don't
do
get
a,
to
do a cross-check. You should be able to, excuse me, find out how many of those people that she sent the notices to.
No, that's exactly what, that's exactly a project that I'm working on because I think that that's exactly what happened.
But Rob, if you really want to help the Republicans in Massachusetts, you're going to use your energy in another way. That's not what's going to tip the balance.
Uncovering corruption is a very good way to use your energy.
What you've got to do is talk
uncovering
about
the corruption
platform.
Of the Massachusetts Democratic Party, which
well,
you know,
that
one
isn't
of the
corruption.
No, that's corruption. Every other state, the Secretary of State wanted to fight it. And Governor Patrick rolled over and did it.
Republicans are losing because of the issues. When the Democrats knock on doors, they have a conversation and they talk about what the Democrats stand for. It's health care, it's education, it's environmentalist, global climate change, and all of those things. And the Republicans lose on those issues, and that's why they lost so badly in Massachusetts.
No, they lose because they knock on
doors. And why they lost across the country. And so if you're still complaining about people getting voter registration cards, that's not what's going to help
the party.
We actually lose. Well, you make a very good point. We actually lose because we don't do the door knocking. We don't do the door knocking. If we in races that we did the door knocking, like Ryan Fatman, no, it absolutely helps.
Oh,
Ryan Fatman had a lot of money spent against him. He's a young kid, 28 years old in Sutton, and he knocked on over 8,000 doors and won 70-30. He outdid. It was a very conservative district, but he outdid Scott Brown by 5 points, and he outdid the president by 15 points across the district. Jim Lyons had $160,000. Spent against him by left-wing interest groups, a part of the $880,000 that was spent by left-wing interest groups in independent expenditures this election. Jim Lyons knocked on 8,500 doors, and Jim Lyons won by 500 votes or 2 points. Knocking on doors, but in the areas where we did that, and our candidates did that,
okay.
I
can see why the candidate knocking on a door would be helpful, but some surrogate, I don't understand why that's helpful. That would be annoying to me.
Well, for some people it is, and I've knocked on a lot of doors, but for most people it isn't. They appreciate the fact that you are taking the time, that the issues are so important to you that you are going because you want to talk to them. And it's not necessarily a stranger. It could be your neighbor. It could be a friend. It could be someone you know. So it personalizes the issue.
You ran for state senate.
I did, and I knocked on a lot of doors.
Yeah. In 2008, was it 2007, in the Jim Oganowski special election that Nikki Tsongas won, there's two precincts in Lowell. They were the precincts that my paper route happened to be on. I went back home. I door knocked on people that I knew. I made some jokes with, you know, you still owe me $5.75 from the paper, you know, 20 years ago. Jim Oganowski won those two districts. It makes a And that's one of the things, that's another thing that I'm trying to get people in the Republican Party to see. It's not just the knocking on doors. It's the knocking on doors in your neighborhood with people that you know. And that's, you know, it's not, a lot of times it's not issues. It's not those sorts of things. They can say that that's what it is. John Walsh has put together an amazing ground game, and I'll give him all the credit in the world. He has put together an amazing ground game focused on people who know people talking to the people that they know. And I think it's less focused on issues because if you look at poll after poll, the issues that Republicans stand for, lower taxes, fiscal responsibility, win in Massachusetts.
That's simply not true.
Back to the special election. Don't you think there'd be a huge hue and cry from the electorate if they didn't allow people to vote?
The people of Massachusetts have voted again and again for Democrats that don't believe in the rule of law. So there's absolutely another absurd assertion
that has no basis in fact or reality. But what you're saying is that if we don't have a special election and if the governor votes and someone holds the seat, there will be a huge outcry.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's possible that the governor could appoint someone who's really well-liked and well-respected and who does a good job. And ultimately, it isn't the governor's decision. It's up to the legislature to decide how long the interim appointee, or if there is an interim appointee. The governor's not going to have to answer that. The legislature is.
I don't think
and
that
the incumbent.
There is, I mean, they've changed this rule once or twice already.
They did. They changed it last time.
And they changed it for John Kerry.
But the reason that they changed it last time, and this was underreported, the reason that they changed it last time is that without an interim appointee, there could be no constituent services. So if we had just left the seat unfilled, constituents would have had nowhere to go.
So what you're saying is John Kerry has awful constituent services and they couldn't have gone to John Kerry's office?
No, I'm not saying that.
But that's what you said, there'd be no constituent services.
From that particular United States Senator. We have two senators for a reason.
We have nine.
You're talking about when Ted Kennedy died.
Yes, when Ted Kennedy
passed. We had 10 congresspeople and one United States Senator, all Democrats, and none of them could have done the constituent services?
Well, Ted Kennedy actually was phenomenal on constituent services. It was the policy of his office that absolutely everyone who contacted his office heard back from a live body within 24 hours. Yes, I think that's incredibly important, and we needed to not lose.
So John Kerry doesn't do that. That's excellent.
I don't know what John Kerry does. He probably does do that.
But you said that it's to have the constituent services, but yes. We had a United States Senator that could have done that.
You're talking about losing half the constituent services from the United States Senate. I think that's significant. It matters.
That's an awkward justification for changing the law in the middle of a special election to get Obamacare passed, which is why they changed the law.
I just think it would be, out on a limb here. I think people would be really aggravated, even if they're Democrats.
It's interesting that you say that, because when Tim Cahill came on my show and we talked about the special election, he said he thought that one of the reasons that Scott Brown won was because the legislature had changed the rule to allow for an interim appointment, and people thought it was heavy-handed on the part of the Democrats, and it created a backlash against the Democrats. I thought he had a valid point.
I don't know if they even remembered who. I don't.
And I think that if John Kerry, two years is a long time, and they won't remember that's, you know, and you actually started to bring up the point that I think is going to be the excuse for not having it is, it will save money. Because democracy is good, but unless it needs to save money. And then if, you know, we can save money by not having special elections because we'll have this special election, then that special election.
It's not just saving money, though. It's that the legislature is taken away from other work when we are so involved in special election and potentially four special elections in a row. It disrupts
the government. Well, they also do the nice things by just not having special elections like they did this year for two seats that could have had special elections. They go away for an entire half a year. They do all their business in 3 weeks. They basically do all the business of government in 3 weeks.
I think the Republicans need to stop blaming the Democrats for the problems that they have within their party and look at what they're doing.
I'm not blaming the Democrats for the problem
of the state.
What
they're doing wrong and why people don't vote for them.
Well, there's a reason why people keep voting for Democrats.
Right.
Well, part of the problem is that our Republican
leadership. Maybe it's gifts. Because of all the gifts.
Part of it is that our Republican leadership just rolls over and does whatever they did. I mean, Rhonda Nyman, it was a very interesting thing in one of her debates this year. Rhonda Nyman said, "What do you mean that the budget was awful and it's overbalanced? Every Republican except for two voted for it." So, you know, there's a lot to be said of we need to offer an alternative vision of governance, which we don't do at this point in time. And I think that you're going to see a lot of the younger state reps, the Ryan Fatmans of the world, the Kevin Kurroses, the Keiko Orals, those people step up and start doing that. You saw it today when they came out forcefully and said that Ms. Burgess needs to not just get reassigned, but actually go away. And
yeah,
we need to look at the
patronage. Governor agrees with that.
Well, no, they just reassigned her.
I know, but believe me.
He is not pleased.
She's not going to be there in 48
pleased.
Hours.
No.
we'll see about that. No. All right, I've been joined here by Rob Eno of Red Mass Group and Mara Dolan, attorney and co-chair of the Policy Committee of the Massachusetts Democratic State Committee. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you, too.
And Kara Miller is back.
Hey, Emily, so the question is, are there financial terms that just leave you baffled?
Yes.
Yeah. Credit default.
Sequestration.
Swap. Exactly. So we're going to talk about some of those things with Marketplace producer Patty Hirsch, who's their resident, you know, explainer-in-chief when it comes to making everything accessible to the average person.
All right, I'm going to have to take notes.
Okay. I'm Kara Miller.
And I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio.